Okay, so we are live on this snowy March afternoon in Boulder, Colorado, and it's Jeannie, and I'm here with the Shakti Rise Immersion, and I have a special and dear friend coming on today to be our interviewee, Sarah Avant-Stover. So welcome, Sarah.
Hey, Jeannie. It's really great to be here.
Yay. It's like I hear your voice and it takes me to my heart because I know your voice. It's so sweet to hear your voice.
I know your voice too. We go way back.
We do. We go way back.
Yeah.
I mean, I was trying to remember how far back. It's a long time. I mean, I'm afraid to
it's
say.
It's a long time. Over 10 years.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah,
maybe close to 15 years.
Yeah. So beautiful. I love when I have that kind of, it makes me feel like I'm getting older because, of course, my kids are getting older, and all of a sudden I'm looking back on my friendships and relationships of years, of 10 years and 15 years and 20 years. And so I'm delighted that we get this time with you. I'm going to give the women in this training and immersion a little bit of your background. Sarah has a really beautiful background. So Sarah Avant-Stover is a teacher of feminine spirituality and empowerment, a best-selling author and founder of The Way of the Happy Woman. Sarah graduated Phi Beta Kappa and Summa Cum Laude from Columbia University All Women's School, Barnard College. After a cancer scare in her early 20s, Sarah moved to Thailand, where she lived for 10 years and embarked on a decade-long healing and spiritual odyssey throughout Asia. She has since gone on to uplift tens of thousands of women worldwide. Oh, gosh, my heart is like pounding. A pioneer in contemporary women's work, she's the creator of the world's first women's yoga teacher training, Reversing Our Curse, and the She School. Sarah has been featured in Yoga Journal, The Huffington Post, Newsweek, Natural Health, and on ABC, NBC, CBS, and more. And you're currently living in Boulder with your fiancé and your dog, which I love.
Yeah.
And you have a new book out called The Book of She, Your Heroine's Journey into the Heart of Feminine Power. So I just want to start with, like, wow, Sarah, like, I've known you for a long time, and I remember the time when you were embarking on this spark of an idea of writing. And you had been a writer. I remember you had been a writer. You have a lot of Saraswati goddess energy in you already, teacher, writer, speaker. And yet I remember the time when that was just, that was burgeoning more, and you had this itch of Shakti. You had this desire to write a book. And here you are, you're an author of two books now. I mean, that is just a huge accomplishment. So I just want to start there, like, you know, like, brava. It's one thing to, I was talking about this in one of my newsletters lately about meditation and the power to remove the blocks that prevent us from actualizing a project in the world. And I see you as like, wow, you have gone from here to there, and I'm sure it hasn't been all, you know, peaches, and yet you've done it twice now, so that's a huge accomplishment.
Yes,
do you want to say anything about that journey of how you made a leap from you know, wanting to write something, that itch, that longing to manifestation?
Mm. Yeah, it's a lot of tenacity and determination and discipline. Not very sexy stuff. Of course, there's magic and muse in it as well, but that's really the foundation. And since I was a little girl, I've wanted to be an author. And I've just known that however long my life is, I want to write as many books as I can.
Mm.
And like you said, I was really consciously building my writing platform throughout my 20s. And when I was in Thailand writing for various magazines, and when I moved to Boulder, I just knew it was time to just dig in a little deeper and write my book proposal and take it one step at a time and figure out how to do the whole book writing thing. And that's what I did, just one step at a time, and until there's a book in my hands.
Wow.
I still don't know, even with my new book, I still look at it and I just think, I know I worked really hard on this for a few years, but I still don't fully understand how this came to be. And that's the magic part of it, too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the piece that you said, like you always knew that you would be a writer since you were a little girl, that really hit me as that we all do have a particular destiny, if you will, a particular particular gifts to cultivate and nourish. And I think to not live out those gifts really leads to despair, to pain, to frustration. And so to see, I think you're just a great model for women for, well, many reasons, but this piece of, you know, accomplishing something that you really felt passionate about, sharing these gifts with the world. I want to back up a little bit because we have been studying Lakshmi in this spring course pretty in depth. And you know, I was listening to some one actually interview I did many years ago with one of my teachers, Douglas Brooks, about Lakshmi. And really what hit me this time, I had listened to this interview so many years ago, and when I went back to listen to it, I heard it in a different way. And it was this piece of Lakshmi that we don't always associate with her, at least I don't always, you know, that, you know, we see her as this sort of gorgeous specimen of a woman. She's studded with gold, and she's got gold coins pouring out of her hands. And, you know, I can feel that part of me that's like, I just want her, you know, like, I want that.
Who doesn't?
You know, I mean, she's pretty perfect. Until you actually go to her myth and the myth of the churning of the Milky Ocean and how she, you know, she really disembodies when she's not respected. And this is one of the great themes I feel is important in today's world is the feminine is being asked. It is coming back. It is coming back like full on. I see it every day. And I feel it in myself, and yet when she's not respected, she disembodies. And what I think what's happening today is this embodiment of her. We're really embodying the feminine again, and yet to embody the feminine really means that we keep diving back into that mucky pond that lotus is blossoming up from the shadow aspects of our life. You know, for me, I've really, since I was a kid, just been really vulnerable about growing up with alcoholism because I thought, well, everyone has a problem. I'm just going to tell my problem. You know, I didn't think of it as something I had to hide out from, although my family did. And that shadow aspect of alcoholism is really something that I have to continue, even at my age. I have to keep continually going back into that muck to see how alcoholism can actually pop up into my life in insidious and kind of hidden ways that can really plague me. So I bring that up because, you know, I'm going back to your story and, you know, I know you had a cancer scare in your 20s. And, I mean, that's pretty intense to have in your 20s. What was that process for you like? How did you have to go back into the shadow aspects, perhaps, of why this was happening, and how has that transition been for you to go from a pretty intense situation to claiming your light again, which I think we're constantly doing over and over and over again?
Yes, I think at that time I was 21, and I had no idea what shadow or any of that stuff was. And it was really my first initiation that I was aware of that brought me onto what I have now come to understand and to write about and to teach is the heroine's journey. And it was like a slap in the face telling me, hey, you're not immortal. You can't just run yourself literally into the ground. I was an exercise addict, and I was just really abusive of my body, bulimic, anorexic, just didn't know how to take care of myself, didn't know how to meet my own needs or even listen to my own needs or ask for help with meeting my needs. And right when I had that diagnosis, it was like my path opened up for me. And rather than going down a certain path, which was going to keep me in academia on the track of getting my PhD and kind of locked into more of that masculine rigor, I got a job opportunity to teach in Thailand, which is a very feminine place. And it was there that I actually got the education that I needed in starting to understand how to be a woman, living in harmony with the seasons and working with my menstrual cycle, aligning my yoga practice, the foods that I ate, the ways that I engaged day to day with where I was in my hormonal cycle, I learned how to meditate, learned Reiki, and just learned how to eat healthy foods versus what I thought was healthy back when I lived in New York, which was like fat-free frozen yogurt and fat-free everything, which now we know is really one of the worst things that we can do for ourselves. So that was really my initiation onto the path. And since then, particularly my second book, The Book of She, was really my descent into understanding shadow more deeply. I had a relapse of my bulimia when I was in my early 30s when I was writing my first book that completely blindsided me and threw me into a lot of introspection to see how can I be back in this place. I thought I had healed this. Here I am writing about women's happiness and women's health, and I'm back in this place where, you know, I thought this whole body of work was helping to heal this. And so it was very humbling and also very illuminating because I saw that this is how we evolve throughout our lives, especially if we have early childhood trauma. And Jeannie, I have a similar background to you, that both of my parents were alcoholics, and grateful that they're both in recovery now. But I had a lot of trauma. I had a really, really challenging childhood. And I'm a very, very sensitive person, so that made it go all that deeper. And at different times in my life so far, different pieces of that have come to the surface as my container. You know, my body, my psyche, my emotional body gets stronger, my spirit, for those pieces to be healed. And it's not pretty. It's messy, but it's necessary for wholeness, and it is a beautiful process. So that, you know, that experience in my early 30s, then, you know, decade after my cancer scare, was in a lot of ways more traumatic than the cancer scare. And it's something that has then just become a much more integral part of my teaching and my practice, is to constantly be working with my shadow, be working with old trauma, because it just influences everything. And luckily, we're living at a time when there's a lot of research available, a lot of really exciting neuroscience looking at this early childhood experience and how it impacts us as adults, how to work with it, especially shows up in our intimate relationships.
Yes.
So it's, you know, like, yeah, Lakshmi, it's the mud, but it's really the only way to reclaim our inner wholeness and to know our true beauty, authentic beauty.
Yes, I totally relate to that. And, you know, it's a cycle. You know, I think sometimes we think, you know, well, if I just heal this, then it's all better. Or, you know, what I'm learning through deep, deep, deep states of meditation is that there is a root contraction in every human being. It's whether we've had, you know, present day conditioning or trauma in our childhoods, there is even beneath all of that is a root contraction of, you know, lack, a sense of not feeling whole, a sense of feeling unworthy in some in some cases. And I can relate to some of this. You know, I think that's why I was drawn to yoga so early on, was, and dance was, I sensed this deep disconnect in my father, and yet he was such an incredible artistic soul. And especially for him, it was a time in history when that sensitivity for a man wasn't really, it wasn't, in his world, wasn't really acceptable. So, you know, the deep-rooted contractions can be confusing because, yes, there are things like alcoholism in my life and the sense of lack that he felt. Certainly, I think I took that on in my own way. And yet, even beneath that, the yogic processes would say that there is a deep root of fear and contraction in every human being. And really, the only way to dig that out is to really go into deeper states of meditation, where the Shakti becomes so enlivened, that feminine aspect of ourselves becomes so enlivened that she does this cosmic surgery on us. And I'm having experiences of that now that are just so enthralling and so that you use that word wholeness, and that is the word I would use. It's a feeling when I come back into my world that I've been literally bathed in light, and I'm softer, and I feel more sensual, and I feel more spacious, and a lot of creativity can come from this place. And so I've been encouraging a lot of my students to take up a strong meditation practice, and I'm working on a meditation practice that actually is goddess-based and householder-based. And so, you know, when we tap into a deep meditative state and we start tapping into Bij mantras of goddesses, it really has incredible power. It's like you're instilling or installing the essence of Lakshmi, let's say, into your subtle body. And it has this incredible power of uprooting some of our deepest contractions that prevent us from truly healing. You know what I mean? It's like, I want to truly heal this lifetime. And so I'm curious if you have any experiences in that realm of, you know, like, how do we really uproot challenges that derail us?
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful what you shared. And I agree with you up until a point. And I think this is where it depends upon each person's experience and their trauma. But I have found in my own life that, and in a lot of people that I know, is when there is deep trauma, meditation alone isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I adore meditation. I've been a devout meditator for almost 20 years now. And it's a key part of my life, and it will be for the rest of my life. But one of the things I discovered when my shadow material reemerged with my bulimia in my early 30s was that meditation and yoga isn't enough. It creates, when we think that we can just anchor into those to heal everything, it can get us stuck in spiritual bypassing, where we think that we can only use those practices to kind of transcend our pain. And so what I have found is that we really need to marry psychotherapeutic work with the spiritual practice and interweave those together, because these deep wounds, these deep traumas, they happened in relationship, usually in the first 7 years of our lives, in relationship to our mothers or whoever was our primary caregiver, and usually a lack of empathic connection during those years when we are so impressionable and when our brains are literally like hot wax and they just get wired into us. And we can have these deep-seated patterns of anxiety or avoidance and addiction. So I think I really recommend for everyone is to have some understanding of psychology, of early attachment. There's a lot of great books out. There's a great book by Mark Epstein called The Trauma of Everyday Life, which really marries meditation with this kind of trauma and wounding that we're all constantly being traumatized. And even the Buddha himself, his mother died when he was 6 days old. So he was kind of just baked in that trauma. And Epstein points out that that is perhaps one of the big things that led him on this path and to discover this path of freedom. So ways that we can work with that just like on a daily basis is something that I call the four-part check-in, which is really the foundation, the foundational practice that I do every day. I encourage women to do every day, where you check in with the four parts of yourself. So you check in with your body and you actually go into your body and see, okay, what are the sensations? What does this body need? So like a mother looking at her child in the morning, what does this child need? And then not just noting the need, but then actually filling it, taking action. Because how many times do we feel that we're thirsty, but we don't drink a glass of water?
Yeah.
It's just one little example.
Yeah, no.
And then we do move to the other layers of the mind, just seeing like what are these loops going on in my mind? What's the actual state of my mind? Is it sleepy? Is it restless? Is there a lot of doubt? We look at our feelings, and then the level of spirit, which I call for a woman or she, this inner wise woman, this inner knowing. And as we practice that, then we can get more sophisticated and bring in what I call our inner family of selves and start to just know these different parts of our psyche, like our inner critic, our vulnerable child, the pusher, the perfectionist, the inner patriarch, the inner mother, the inner father, and we can start to see where some of our patterns come from and cultivate more of a harmonious relationship within ourselves. So, but none of that can really hold unless, as you were saying, we have a meditation practice and we can stay steady in the storms and we can hold whatever arises within our own loving awareness. So they really need to go hand in hand.
Yeah, it's like I totally agree with you around meditation alone. I've done a ton of psychotherapy and in the past growing up, and now that I'm so deeply immersed in a meditation practice that is really not about leaving you inside. It's actually a householder path that actually brings everything to the surface. So there's a ton of purification that goes on, which we have to be careful of, because if we're not stable enough, it can throw us really off and into some pretty crazy situations. This is a lot of like Kundalini gone astray. And yet, so I would say yes, like psychotherapy can be just such a great place to work with, you know, what I would call purification that comes up out of meditation practice. And at the same time, it really is working on those deep, deep, deep-seated roots of some scaric residue of this lifetime, past lifetimes. And without it, I just wonder about how do we really transform from the inside out? How do we really step into the feminine aspect of ourselves if we don't really know what that is inside? You know what I mean? It's like we can dress like Lakshmi on the outside and play her role, but if we haven't dealt with that inner world, if we haven't dealt with the traumas that live inside the subtle body, we're playing a dangerous edge there of not really transforming. And I believe in the Shri principle. I believe that the universe is ever, ever expanding and we are too. And so to say that we will get to a place that is, you know, like I'm Lakshmi now, you know, I'm like fully her. I kind of laugh because I don't know that I believe that. I do believe that we continuously go through cycles, and just like a woman cycle, we will go through cycles of going down deep and we will start to pull up that black gook from that muddy pond over and over and over again. And yet there will be more clarifying. There will be more. My experience is that there's more joy. There's more freedom. There is freedom in every aspect of my life. Every every, you know, the things that I feel like held me back 20 years ago, they don't exist anymore. And yet, of course, there's more there. So I think that it is a cycle. And I think that we're talking about, like, how do we deal on the inner level, and then how do we get support out in the waking, walking world through psychotherapy, so that we're healthy, we're walking about as healthy individuals. I would also say that I just love what you're bringing into this conversation around the what I would call the umbilical cord, or lack of, or my sister who's just a deep healer, as you know, in town. She always says that she can see the challenges that we have as human beings, usually what she calls like the umbilical cord challenge or something of that nature, where we weren't nourished in those early days. I feel so grateful that I had midwives in Boulder when I home birthed both my children, and they were so helpful because it was like, you know, they just encouraged you to get right in bed and start nursing your child and not to get up for 6 weeks and have people wait on you and bring you food and nourish you. And it was such a huge time of awakening for me around how to be nourished and then nourish my babies in a way that I definitely was not brought up to think about. I mean, Boulder, the community of Boulder, the midwives here have been a huge part of educating people to have babies at home and to, you know, have that incredible home birth situation where there is no interference and that child latches on to the breast immediately. And they're getting all that amazing colostrum in the first few days. I don't know that I got that. And so I feel like, you know, we live in a community where that's, and more and more communities are waking up to the beauty of home birth and the importance of the umbilical cord, the connection to mother in those first few years are just so enormous to our health. I love that you brought that in. That's just something that I think women in this community are educated about, but not everybody. So encouraging.
Yeah, and it's not just the physical nourishment, but above all, it's really the emotional nourishment. And that's our path back to the feminine for men and women, is to cultivate this mother love in our own heart. And it's not a thought, it's a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the feeling of love and extending it to ourselves, bathing ourselves in it. Mm. So one of my favorite meditations is just to sit and actually bathe myself in what I call divine love. It's the beloved within me, just bathing me with love. It's filling me with love. And learning to cultivate that a new relationship with ourselves, because we've inherited so much shame about womanhood, a lot of which we're not even conscious of. And it needs a lot of healing, it needs a lot of compassion, and it's really the first and last step. We can't really fully be in our womanhood until we love the parts of ourselves that are just rejecting our womanhood, that have, we've been told we're not good enough, we're not enough, we need to be this way and not that way, and really bathing ourselves with self-acceptance, and from there being able to find an authentic desire of, well, how do I want to live this life? How do I want to express my womanhood? What does that look like for me?
Mm.
And it goes back to what we were saying earlier. It's such a creative process. And I was having a conversation with a girlfriend last night at sometimes it can be so overwhelming that we have so many options. And like you, I run my own business, and I can really, I mean, obviously I need to have a sound business plan, but there can be so much creativity in it as to what direction I want to go in, how I want to do things. And the same is true just for the larger spectrum of our lives, is we can really create these lives.
Yeah, it's really quite stunning when you recognize that you have that kind of power and empowerment to co-create your life. I look at you and I think, I just smile. It's like really, really beautiful to see that you are doing that. You're co-creating your life. And I know that we're, gosh, it's like we're really like moving along in the time of the interview. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need like 3 hours with you. I'm curious about the Book of She. I haven't read it yet. I want to. Your heroine's journey into the heart of feminine power. I mean, how would you describe, I know for each of us, our journey is going to be different, but what would you describe as the heart of feminine power?
Love.
Love, yes.
Vulnerable, quivering, tender, fierce, unconditional love. That is feminine power. And that is what's going to heal us. That is what's going to heal the world in men and in women. And it's very taboo to live from that place. It's very hard to live from that place. Mm. You know, our wounds are constantly wanting to protect us.
Yes.
To shut us down or to attack. We all have our own pattern to freeze. And that's when we need all of these tools, you know, the meditation to cultivate that inner environment of loving kindness and the psychotherapy to heal the wounds that armor our hearts and the yoga to actually open up the rivers of light in our bodies. And the feeling of light is love. And we need all of these. We need relationships.
Yeah, we do. And I guess that's where I feel like I've come home to myself through meditation, and I feel like that is what's bringing me into a more complete autonomy within myself, so that when I go out and I meet the world and I meet the challenges of the world, or I watch my father pass, or I run into a girlfriend that I've had a challenge with, or, you know, you name it. I have a run-in with my 20-year-old. I mean, I'm feeling like that autonomy is growing inside me, so that I don't feel the grief, like I was saying earlier. I'm devastated. My father's not here anymore. He was such an incredible being. And yet, I don't live every day in a puddle of grief that doesn't allow me to get myself into the world. I think about him every day, but I feel this this inner strength, and I feel more womanly than I ever have. I feel more erotic. I feel more sexual, and I'm menopausal now, and I feel like on fire, and I attribute that to my meditation practice, and then how I then bring that into the world, and how then I see, you know, my challenges still. But what I see is I have more skillful means. I have a sense of more wholeness inside myself. So I can meet my challenges with more compassion, and with I have just a bigger sense of self. I have a bigger. I'm really excited about my wise years, because I'm entering them, and I'm like, well, shoot! I was told that sex would be terrible, that, you know, getting wrinkly would be horrible, and that I would, you know, want to do all these things to myself. And I'm not finding that. I am finding, like, I have more energy than I ever have had. I'm happier. I You know, watching my kids grow up with a sense of awe, and I have an incredible relationship with my husband of 22 years. I really do attribute so much of this to my inner work. And I want to acknowledge that what you are bringing into this conversation, that psychotherapy piece can be so huge for us. And I may enter that again at some point. I'm working pretty deeply in the inner world right now, but that is always meeting me in the world. Every time I walk out the door, I'm meeting, or in my house, I'm meeting another challenge that is asking me to get bigger and brighter and fuller. And I just love this journey, Sarah. I just love this journey. And I love that women have such a huge role today to make an impact.
We're very fortunate to be alive, you know, in that way right now. And you talking about your process of moving more fully into your wisdom years, that's you co-creating is being a new kind of role model that we all need so much.
So I know we're at time. I just want to ask you one last question, and that is, we know the feminine is on the rise, and we know that we have this opportunity as women to make big impacts in our life. Is there any? I know this is kind of a big, bold sort of statement, but is there anything you want to say to these women? In regards to that light that is rising, particularly in women, that is asking women to take a stand at this time on the planet.
Yes, as Nietzsche wrote, and this might not be the exact quote, but the tree that grows to heaven must also grow its roots to hell. So we can't just skyrocket into the cosmos and be love and light. Like it's an equal and opposite descent down. So go into your grit, go into your mess, go into the parts of you that are afraid of losing control, go into the ugliest parts of yourself, go all the way in. And that is the only way that you'll come truly out through into the light.
That is
support
beautiful.
On the way.
That is so beautiful, and it's so apropos to Lakshmi and our study. And I'm so deeply honored to have had this conversation with you. And I hope we can have more conversations, because I love what you're doing, what you're bringing to the world through your writing, your speaking. You're just such a beautiful woman. Inside and out, just I look at you and I'm like, wow, just such a beautiful, beautiful woman. And I'm honored to know you, and I'm honored to know that you are doing this kind of work on the planet. And I know that our listeners can find you, I want to say, at the way of the Happy Woman. Is that your website?
It is, thewayofthehappywoman.com. And you can find a link there to both of my books and my new book. But if you want to go directly to my new book, it's thebookofshe.com, and that really lays out the blueprint, like the exact map, to do what I just spoke of. It's going fully into the dark to come into the light. That is the heroine's journey.
Well, that is so beautiful. Maybe we'll read your book as a group. That would be really fun.
I'd love to give you a copy when we go for a hike.
Oh, that would be lovely.
Yeah.
I'm so deeply honored to have had this conversation, and I look forward to having more conversations with you and bringing you into, just keep doing these interviews. They just seem to be my thing. So
yeah,
love
you're
so
a beautiful
much,
interviewer.
Ra.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and blessings to everyone in your program.
Thank you, Sarah. Much love.